Welcome to the Wealth Studying Podcast. This is John Pugliano, the founder and money manager of InvestableWealth.com. This is episode 23. The Wealth Studying Podcast is all about helping you in your personal life to attain the freedom that you desire by building, preserving, and growing your wealth. In today's episode, we continue our Labor Day series focusing on jobs. And in this episode, we're going to talk about getting the job you want, whether that's your first job out of school, getting that next big promotion, or doing a total career makeover. That's what we're going to discuss in this episode. Before we get started, I'd like to make you aware of an excellent opportunity I had this week. I was fortunate to be interviewed by Joshua Sheets on the Radical Personal Finance podcast. Joshua is an excellent host and a fantastic interviewer. We had a long format conversational discussion. We covered all things related to wealth, from leading the millionaire next door lifestyle to raising your kids, my thoughts and philosophies on saving and investing. It was a really fun and informative interview. If you've never heard Joshua's show, be sure to check it out. That's the Radical Personal Finance podcast. It's available on iTunes and everywhere. He interviewed me on episode 54, and that's also available at his website, which is radicalpersonalfinance.com. Josh is well-educated and highly versed in all things finance. His heart is definitely in the right place. He's a young guy. He comes at things from a slightly different perspective than I do, but overall, I think our philosophies gel together very well, and I think you'll enjoy listening to him. So give his podcast a try, Radical Personal Finance. If you're a new listener to the Wealth Studying Podcast, make sure you go back and listen to the first 10 episodes. That's where we lay the foundation for building wealth, and I describe to you the 10 wealth-building principles. Each one is dedicated to a specific topic that's important for you to know and understand and implement in your life to live a wealth-studying lifestyle. With that, let's jump into today's subject. All this week, in honor of Labor Day, we're talking about jobs. In our last episode, we talked about finding the job you want, finding where you fit, doing what you were born and put on this earth to do. Today, we're going to talk about how to get that job, and then in the next episode, we'll discuss how to get paid for what you're worth. So we're covering how to do what you love, how to get that job, and then how to make sure you're compensated for what you deserve. Remember, when we break wealth down into a simple equation, wealth is simply equal to earning plus saving plus investing. You have to do them in that order. You can't be an investor until you're a good saver, and you can't be a saver until you have a surplus cash stream. So that means you have to lead a disciplined life where you bridle your consumption, and you have to find out how to increase your earnings capacity. So that's why in the Wealth Studying Podcast, we just don't talk about investing. We just don't talk about stock trading techniques. We discuss all aspects of wealth. And that's why this week we're focusing on the job part. That's the earnings part of the equation. Now, what I'm going to tell you about going out and getting that job that you want, this isn't something I read in a book. This isn't something someone taught me. This is something I learned. I guess some people would call it in the school of hard knocks. I wish I had been told this. I wish it was something simple that I'd read in a book. And in fact, what I'm going to tell you is very similar to what you can read in a book. If you're familiar with Dan Miller, he has many excellent publications. He has a great website. He has a fantastic podcast. That's Dan Miller of 48 Days to the Work You Love. I discovered him a few years ago, and his methods, although not identical to mine, are very similar. So after you listen to me today, you might want to check out what Dan Miller has to say and get his perspective. Well, what I talk about today is going to be relevant to whether it's your first job or whether it's getting that next promotion or kind of a lateral move or a similar job with another organization, or whether it's totally radical. Maybe it's what you want to do as a second career after you retire, or maybe it's a total career makeover. Maybe you're like me and you have a midlife crisis and you want to do something totally unique. As always, we're going to cover the bases, but we have to do it in a general way. I'm going to talk to you from my personal experiences, what I think and what I believe, and then you can take my opinions and my experiences and you can adapt them to your own personal life. It's been my experience that there's four ways to get a job. The first is through your personal network. The second is by studying the market and then making a cold call. The third method is by using headhunters or recruiters. And the fourth and final method, and the least desirable, the one you actually never want to use, is by answering a want ad. That's the last place you want to go to. So let's cover these four topics. The first one is your own personal network. It's by far the best method. Your network consists of your friends, your family, their friends and family. I don't know the statistics, but I'd say probably most jobs are attained that way. Your brother-in-law knows somebody, or your friend comes to you with a lead, or your next-door neighbor tells you about an opportunity in his company. This is the informal network. Some may refer to it as the good old boy network, but it works for everybody. It works whether you're old and it works whether you're a boy. The trick is to have a large network. And what I want to stress to you, and this is what I stress in all areas of our life, I don't want you to go out and establish a large network just for the sake of having a network. I don't want you to go out to LinkedIn or Facebook and have like 10,000 contacts of people you really don't know. I think that works against you. It may help you get a job, but it may not be the job you want. It may be a job that you actually regret. When I talk about a network, I'm talking about people that you actually enjoy being around. People that have the same morals and the same lifestyle and the same standards as you. Remember, if you want to see your future, look at your friends. People you hang around are going to reflect who you are and where you're going to end up. So you should be surrounding yourself with a network of people that are like-minded, people that have similar goals, people that are achievers. And then just in the course of your day-to-day interactions with them, you're going to be made aware of opportunities, opportunities that fit you, that fit your worldview, that fit your moral standards. If you go out and build a network just for the sake of building a network, or you attend these, you know, supposedly networking meetup groups, I think they're all phony baloney. I think they're all a bunch of hype. You want to be networking with the people that you honestly and truly want to be around. You want to be authentic. You want the people around you to be authentic. Otherwise, you're going to be miserable. Yeah, like I said, you might get that job, but in the end, you'll find out it's not the job you really want. You won't be able to stand your coworkers. You won't like the unethical business practices of that company, or you'll find yourself having to compromise your high standards. So like Stephen Covey says, start with the end in mind. You want to be working at a great place that provides you growth opportunities that's aligned with your lifestyle and your goals. So you start with that up front. Don't settle for anything less. Don't go out and take a job just to get one. Work someplace that really fits with who you are, what you want to be, and where you want to go. That's why in the previous episode, I started out by talking about finding the job that you love, finding the career that you love. And now in this episode, we'll talk about how to get that job. And then the last episode, the next episode, that's what we'll reserve for the earning part, for actually how to make money. So as I say, networking is by far the absolute best way to find a job. If someone in your network is aware of the job and they tell you about it, you'll have the inside track. You'll know about it before they put it out on some website and get inundated with 10 million resumes. You'll be able to get the inside scoop on the company. Is it really a place that you want to work? Are the people there friendly? Is the management encouraging? Is it the kind of place you want to work? What's the pay scale like? How far of a commute is it from your home? What exact skills are they looking for? Is it something that you can really do? Is it something you're going to enjoy doing? You'll be able to know all about the company and the position and your coworkers before you ever set foot in the building. And likewise, they're going to know a lot about you. You're going to come based on a referral from someone in your network. They're going to say, yeah, this is the kind of guy or girl that we want around. This is the kind of person we want on our team. Now, just because they say that, it doesn't mean you're going to get the job. You're going to still have to go in there and perform well in the interview. You're going to have to go in there and sell them on yourself. But the door is at least being open to you. You've already been identified as somebody that fits into their culture, someone that's part of their tribe. It's a win-win. It's good for you because it's the kind of company and the kind of people and the kind of ethics that you want, and you're the kind of employee that they want. That's the advantage of working within your network. And again, that's assuming that your network is comprised of honest, ethical, authentic, like-minded people. Those are crucial. When it comes to your personal network, like I said, be authentic, focus on people that have your own similar values and virtues, but do go out of your comfort zone. Make it a point to go out and meet those people. They're just not going to come knocking on your door. People are every bit as shy and apprehensive as you are. You need to go out and introduce yourself. You need to make those contacts and relationships happen, or otherwise they won't. Stay in touch with old friends. Stay in touch with people you went to school with. Keep in touch with old neighbors. People you know in your community, maybe people you know from church or from an organization where you volunteer. Stay in touch with old coworkers, former bosses you might have had, people within the same company but different divisions. And again, remember, your network is not only your relationship directly with them, but it's also their friends and their family. So look for those great people. They're all around you. And I think all this is pretty self-explanatory, so I won't belabor the point. The best method to find the job that you want is to first start with your network. Start with your friends, start with your family, and then expand out from there talking to their friends and their family. See what the labor market's like. See what the demand is like. Find out what employers want. Now, the second method, and I think of all the methods, this is the one that's least pursued, which is a shame because it's absolutely effective. It works like a charm, and the things that I talk about in this method are also going to relate to how you conduct yourself in any interview, whether you get that job interview through this method, through the first method of networking, through the third method of going through a recruiter or headhunter, or through the dreaded fourth method, which is answering a one ad. And the second method, as I say, it's the road less traveled because it's hard. It takes a lot of work. It requires you to get outside of your comfort zone. It requires you to do some studying and some work on your own. It requires you to put yourself out there. It forces you to face rejection. Now, these may all be difficult tasks, but I promise you, if you don't have a network in place, this is your next best option. And the method is researching companies in the geographic area that you want to work and then making physical contact with them in a creative way to get in the door for an interview. As I mentioned before, this is very similar to techniques that Dan Miller describes in 48 Days to the Work You Love. But I'm giving you my own interpretation of it, and I'm also telling you things that I know work because I've used them for decades in my own life, long before I ever read them in Dan Miller's book. I use these techniques to get many jobs in different industries. I use these techniques to repackage and resell myself, to reinvent myself. I went from having a military background to getting my first job in industrial sales with a major chemical company, to bouncing around in that industry, to going out and doing something totally different, working at a startup at a jewelry grade type company. That later took me into a completely different industry, which was ladies' cosmetics. Yeah, do you believe that one? I actually sold lipstick at one point in my life, and I was good at it. From there, I went back into the industrial sales side of things. And then once I came back to the industrial sales industry, I worked for another, I think, three companies. So that's a lot of jobs, that's a lot of different industries. And then even within those specific jobs in those companies, there were many times when I changed either geographical, lateral moves, promotions. So I'm talking to you with the voice of experience. So let's focus now on the second method. It is the second best method only after your own personal network. Now, sadly, many of us, or maybe most of us, really don't have a reliable network that we can use. And so, until you've built that network, you've got to start somewhere. And that's why this second method is so important. If you don't have that network in place, a network which really is going to take you years to develop, you've got to get in the right job in the right positions, probably before you can build that network. So this is kind of the chicken and the egg thing. If you don't have the network in place, you don't have a chicken or an egg. So you just got to go out and start from scratch. So here's what you do. You pick the geographic area where you want to live. And that's important, and that's a mistake I made. And I want to reemphasize, I'm talking to you from experience. I'm talking to you straight from my heart. One of my few regrets is that I never put down roots. I lived in so many places. I'd go from job promotion to job promotion, job transfer to job transfer, and I really wish I'd put down roots in one spot. So if putting down roots are important to you, then you figure out where you want to live. Whether it's close to family, or whether it's close to the beach or the mountains, or whatever it is that turns you on, don't wait for a company to transfer you there. Don't hope you get an assignment there. You go out and make it happen. You locate that place on a map, and you figure out what companies or corporations or job opportunities are available there, and then you go get them. So whatever it is, determine that geographic location where you want this job to take place. Once you've done that, focus on the work that takes place in that area. Each geographic area, each city, each metropolitan area, each village, each town, they all have a different personality. They all have a unique reason for being there. Chicago just didn't materialize out of thin air. Chicago is where it's at because of its geographic position in the middle of the United States on major waterways. Same thing with New York and Philadelphia on the East Coast. People just didn't show up there one day. Those major cities evolved and grew into gigantic metropolitan areas because of their location, because of their geography, because of the natural surroundings that encouraged people to go there and certain businesses to flourish. Des Moines, Iowa is where it's at, again, because it serves a purpose. San Francisco, Seattle, all these places are very unique. Industries and culture and work styles have grown up there for particular reasons. Find out what's unique about the place that you want to go. Find out the work ethic. Understand the history. Inform yourself about why things are the way they are. I mean that, really. Go back and study it. Understand the history of the place and the history of the work. Why do certain industries flourish there? For example, Silicon Valley. There are very specific reasons why the high technology startup business is in Silicon Valley. and they're not as obvious, is why farming or agriculture would have emerged in, say, Iowa, or the oil or cattle industry would have emerged in Texas. Those are a little easier to figure out. But whatever it is, the place you want to go has a unique history. It has a unique personality. And the work there and the industry that has evolved is very specific. Find out why. The reason that is important is because if you understand the work, and again, I'm not talking about the jobs. I haven't gone to the job market yet. There's a difference between jobs and work. The Silicon Valley region of the Bay Area is very unique and very specific. There are a lot of different kind of jobs there, but the work is very specific. Likewise, the work in the wine valley of Napa Valley, very unique and very different from any other thing in the country. Now, you may be an accountant in Des Moines, you may be an accountant in Silicon Valley, or you may be an accountant in Napa Valley. And the accounting, quote, job, the job will all be the same, but the work you do will be very different if, and this is an important if you want to be highly skilled and proficient in that industry, in that area. A great accountant in Silicon Valley isn't going to be just some generic accountant. That person is going to be well-versed in startups, in technology, in financing, in all the unique attributes that have to do with Silicon Valley. And likewise, that accountant in Des Moines, that person is going to be very well-versed in agriculture, in the ag business, in farmland. Do you see the difference? The jobs, the job description may be accountant, but the outstanding accountant, the high-achieving accountant, the accountant that is a high earner and is in high demand throughout his community, that accountant, the go-to man, the problem solver, the one that everybody recommends, the accountant that is in everybody's Rolodex, that man or that woman has that reputation because they're not just an accountant. They're an expert in the industry and in the work that takes place in the geographic area where they live. Yes, I know there's overlaps, and yes, I understand we're in a global economy, but it's still very specific to the geography. If you're an aerospace engineer in Seattle, you're going to be working in a very different atmosphere than if you're an aerospace engineer in Wichita, Kansas, or in Paris, France. And it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that you may be working at Boeing, or at Airbus, or at Learjet. A Coca-Cola bottling plant on the East Coast of the United States, although it may be owned by the same corporation, although they may have the same high standards, although they may have the same quality controls and Six Sigma, although they may have the same corporate training programs, although they may share some of the same common employees, that Coca-Cola bottling plant, say in Philadelphia, will be different. It will have a different environment. It will have a different culture than a Coca-Cola bottling plant in Los Angeles. And at each of those bottling plants, even though they're selling a branded product like Coca-Cola, if they're doing their job, those facilities will have unique personalities because they're serving different customers. They're serving a different community. These are extreme examples, but I really want to make that point. Remember, if you're an accountant, that's a job. But if you want to be a great accountant, if you want to be the best accountant, if you want to be the accountant that never has to look for work, that always has a job offer, that has a limitless career opportunity, then you don't want to be an accountant that just has a job. You want to be an accountant that serves your specific industry in your specific geographic location, whether that's Napa Valley, Silicon Valley, or Des Moines, Iowa. I spent a lot of time on this, but I want you to understand the geographic place you work is every bit as important as the specific industry and the specific company. So choose it wisely. Now that you've narrowed down your geographic area and you understand the work, you understand what those people do there for a living, then start to get granular and narrow down on individual employers. Are you going to work in a service industry? Are you going to work in a manufacturing facility? Are you going to work as a professional, maybe as a legal professional or a medical professional? That's when you start drilling down. So you have your geographic area, you have the type of work you want to do, and you've narrowed it down to the companies. Make a list, put a bunch of companies on it. I can't tell you exactly how many should be on your list. Say 20 or 30 or maybe 40 different companies that you'd like to work for. This is your first time through. I'm not going to say you're going to contact all those people. But you have to start broad, right? You have to start large. Make your bullseye very broad. And then once we've identified those companies, we're going to narrow it in. As best as we can, we're going to find out the things that we can't find out through a personal network because we don't have one established. We want to find out what the culture is at these companies. We want to find out what the pay scale is. We want to find out what the earnings potential are. We want to understand what the growth possibilities are. Again, if you had a network in place, it was going to make all this simpler. But you don't. You're starting from scratch. That's why I said this is the least pursued method. Method number two is the road less traveled, because it's the most work. But it can be highly successful, not only in the fact of getting you the job, but in also getting you the correct job, getting you that job that you want, being able to work with the caliber of people that you want. If you do your homework up front, like all things, it's going to save you time in the end. It's better to spend a lot of time finding and searching for that right company than to get hired at a place that you hate and being stuck there. So start with a broad bullseye, those 30 or 40 companies. Just get a scratch pad. Do your pros and cons. You have 30 or 40 companies. Put them in a spreadsheet or just do it on the scratch paper. Start writing everything down you can find out about them. And it's so much easier today to do this than it was 20 years ago when I had to do it. You have LinkedIn. You have Facebook. You have individual corporate websites. So in detail, you've studied these 30 or 40 companies. You have all this information about them. With all this insight, rank them in order of who you think you would want to work for. Just whittle that list down. Say, take it down to your top 10 choices. Let's start there. And these are the companies that you can really see yourself working at. And then you're going to go even granular. You've taken it down to the corporate level, but now you want to take it down to the personal level. See, the whole point of going through this exercise is that you not only want to find the geographic area that you want to live in and the company that you want to work for, but you want to find the right person to get in front of. That's what makes method two so hard, but also so very effective. Because you're not wasting your time answering 1,001 ads that a million other people are answering. You want to be unique. You want to target your approach to one individual so that he receives your one message. You want to be able to highlight yourself. And you can only achieve that by picking out the decision maker at that specific company where you want to work. Drill down on that company. Find out who the person is that you would work for, or even maybe better yet, who's the boss of the person that you want to work for. This is one of the few situations when you can go directly above your boss and get away with it. So aim high. Go as high as you can go without looking silly. If you want to get an entry-level job at ExxonMobil, I think it's safe to assume that you're going to waste your time sending an email to the CEO or calling up and leaving a message with his secretary. So use common sense. Approach the decision-maker that you think is most appropriate for the position that you're going after. So here's the essence of how you're going to contact them. You're going to send them a letter or some type of an object, something physical, something they can hold in their hands, that a few days later you're going to follow that up with a phone call and an email. So as to the actual content of the letter you're sending them, what's in it? Well, again, you have to use your common sense. It has to pertain to the position you're seeking. It has to be relevant to your skills and abilities. Start with your common sense, and let's think through this and try and develop it. I can't give you all the details. You'll have to think things through for yourself. But it's got to be something that you can tie in. You want to be able to relate to them on a personal level. And so you reference that. That's number one. And then number two, you reference why you want to get in front of them for a job interview. And it may not be a direct job interview. It may just be that you want to sit down with them and discuss the specific industry they're in. You want to discuss your future in that industry. You want to discuss some ideas that you have for that industry. Again, I can't tell you specifically because I don't know who you are. I don't know what job you're going after. And I don't know that person you're targeting. But to boil it down, in essence, this is what you want. You want to send them a physical document, a box, an object, something that they can hold in their hand and that they can visualize on. And then you want that message in that document or in that item to do two things. It wants to establish a personal link, an authentic link, between you and them. And then it wants that call to action in there that mentions why you're sending this, why you're contacting them, and how it relates to either working with that company or working within that industry. Again, this may not be something you're specifically asking for a job interview at that company, because you may just be saying that you know they're an expert in a particular field and you want to have lunch with them and discuss something about that industry or how you relate to it. Now, this may sound far-fetched, but I'm telling you, I guarantee it works. You have to do your homework, and you have to present things in a very professional manner. Just don't throw this in a cheap envelope and mail it to them. Go down to your local UPS store and get them to put it in a nice UPS mailer, or like I say, like an overnight box. Put it in the right packaging. Make sure it's written on excellent stationery. If you're referencing an article that the person wrote or that you wrote or that you think is germane to the connection you're trying to make with them, make sure that article is printed on the highest quality bond paper. Or if you actually have the publication, enclose the publication with it. That's even better. You know, sending them a magazine or a journal article that you're referencing. Again, if you're trying to make a connection and this is riskier, but if you want to make it on the personal connection, and you know that they're a fly fisherman, maybe you send them a certain type of fly. If they're a golfer, maybe you send them a certain kind of high-quality golf ball. But you have to make that connection. You have to send it for a reason. You have to tie it in. The reason this is harder to do and riskier to do is you can't come off as being cheesy. You have to tie that item, that personal item, into your business purpose. You can't just say, hey, I know you like to play golf. Here's a set of expensive golf balls. Can I come in for an interview? Right? Remember, you're being genuine. You're being authentic. Maybe you're interviewing for a technical position with a chemical company. They make certain types of polymers and resins. The decision maker that you're trying to get in front of is an avid golfer. You find the highest quality set of two or three golf balls on the market. They're ones that are real high tech and renowned for whatever reason, right? You can hit them farther, they go straighter. I don't know, I'm not a golfer, so I don't know the lingo. So you put those in a box and you send that to this man or this woman with a letter that expresses your interest to be in this industry. Again, maybe to get in there for an interview, something along those lines. And then you reference something to do with these high tech chemicals and maybe the composition of these golf balls. And you mentioned that since you know that they're a golfer, that you thought they might appreciate this and you want them to try them out and let you know how they work, right? Something like that, right? And this is, again, I'm just pulling that out of thin air, just using that as an example. You have to develop this and make it unique and right for not only you, but the person you're targeting. But again, I assure you, I know this technique works. I think the absolute best way to do this is that when you have that list of the 10 companies that you want to work for, and you know that decision maker at each company that you're targeting, you send them a letter specifically addressed to them, their needs, and their company, and you tell them, and this is assuming that you want to get a job with that company, you tell them that you specifically want to come in for an interview, and you want to come in for that interview because you want to discuss ways that you can help their company meet their objectives. And I don't know what those objectives are, right? You've studied that company, so you know that they're going into this new technology and they need, you know, XYZ kind of people. Or you know they've opened up a new market and they need someone that speaks Spanish or Italian or French, right? And you're an expert at that. Or you know that they've implemented some new type of quality control program, and you're a Six Sigma guru, and so you can help them with that. Again, I don't know what their problem is. I don't know what your skills are. But you have to relate those two together. And you very specifically point this out in that letter, that you want an interview, and you want to discuss these key two or three things that will help take their business to the next level. Now, obviously, again, if you're starting out at a very low introductory level, you know, beginner position in this company, you're not going to be sending a letter to the CEO. You know, for example, let's say that you wanted to get a customer service job. You would find out whoever the director of that division is or that department. You'd send them this very specific letter outlining who you are, why you want to get in front of them, and it's to help them specifically with their customer service in this example. Maybe you've read an article where you know that they're beefing up their either inbound or their outbound call center, and that you want to start out working there because, right, you're an entry-level employee. And you can specifically mention the skill set that you have to help them with that. Or maybe you're a networking guy and you know how to hook up those networks, right? You want to specifically tell them, these are two or three or four things that I think I can do to make your job easier. Because at the end of the day, that's all your boss wants. He or she wants their job to be easier. They want to go home with less headaches. They don't want to have to baby employees. They don't want cranky employees. They don't want employees that are causing trouble. They want somebody that makes their job easier. They want somebody that makes them money. And that's the essence of what you need to get into that letter. Now, once you sent them this letter or this item to get their attention, you're going to follow it up with a phone call and an email. And again, that's why you're sending this through UPS. You want this parcel with a tracking code so you know exactly when it's signed for, when it's on their desk. And then 3 business days later, you want to follow that up with a phone call or maybe an email or both, acknowledging that you sent it and you'd like to follow up to get that appointment or for whatever call to action you put in there. This method takes a lot of guts, it takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of self-confidence. Virtually no one does it, and I give you my word, I absolutely know that it works. It doesn't work 100% of the time. That's why you're picking 10 companies. You've narrowed that list of 30 or 40 companies down to 10. If you send this out to 10 companies, it's been my experience that you'll get an interview with at least 3. And again, you're getting an interview with the decision maker. You're getting an interview with the person you're going to be working for, or maybe even the person above them. So this is a high-level, high-stakes interview. So chances are, even though you only get 3 interviews out of the 10 letters you sent, you're going to get a job offer, if not 3 job offers, from these 3 interviews. And since you've already done your homework, you know this is the company you want to work for. You know this is a place you belong. You know this is a place where you're going to advance your career. That's why this method is so powerful, and I urge you to try it. Now, the third method is less effective It's the route that many people take, and this is networking and getting in contact with industry headhunters and recruiters. These people are very effective, but getting in front of the right ones without an established network is almost as difficult as applying for the actual job itself. But it can be done. You can start from scratch and work with these people. Although, again, these headhunters and recruiters, these are people that you want to put into your network as you develop one over the years. They will be the people you rely on for future jobs. But if you don't have that, you need to go out and put it in place. So find these recruiters and headhunters. You find them on the internet. You find them on LinkedIn. You contact them in a professional and impressive manner, and you do that by phone calls, emails, again, maybe sending them something physically in the mail. You're going to spend less time doing that with these guys than you would with an actual decision maker at a company, but you do want to impress them. You do want to get in front of them. You want them to know that even though you may not be the right candidate at this time for the jobs that they currently have available, that you'll be there for future jobs. You'll quickly and promptly answer any phone calls or emails that they send you. You'll be kind and courteous. And again, while they may not have a position for you now, you're going to be very free-flowing with information. You will be happy to refer people that you know to them that may fit the jobs or the positions that they currently have open. You will be very happy to pass on to them names of companies or human resource directors that have job openings that don't pertain to you or ones that you're not interested in. But again, it may help this headhunter or recruiter with a new contact that he doesn't have. It may help this headhunter or recruiter with an open position that they weren't aware of. So you're not just going to go to the headhunter or recruiter and ask for things. You're not just going to be saying, gimme, gimme, gimme. You're going to be a resource for them. You're going to be giving. Remember, production is the source of wealth. That's a wealth-building principle. You need to produce for people in your network. You want this recruiter to be a lifelong friend of yours, someone in your network. You want him to value you. And if you can provide him with a lead or an opportunity or another contact, you're ready and willing and able to do that for him. Recruiters are great resources to work with. They're compensated by placing you, and so they're not going to waste time. If they think that you have the talent or the ability or the resume or the background that the position that they're trying to fill requires, they will absolutely do everything to get you in front of that hiring manager, to position you right, to give you the inside scoop on that company. Again, they're going to be that network that you don't have in place. That's why headhunters and recruiters are so critical to a job search. But again, this is a more crowded field. A lot of people are vying for that recruiter's attention. So it isn't the preferred method, but it is a good method. Now finally, the least preferred method, and we're not even going to dwell on it, but that's about answering one ads. And whether they're in Craigslist or on LinkedIn or some other industry-specific website or journal or organization that you belong to, they're the last place that you want to go. Because everybody and their brother saw that same ad that you did, and people are firing off emails and firing off resumes and wasting incredible amounts of time filling online applications, and they'll never get a call back. It's a crowded field. There's virtually no way for you to stand out. So this is the last method that you want to use, and I really won't say any more about it. So let's tie this all together. I talked about these methods being useful for the person that's looking for their first job, for the person that's currently in a job and maybe wants to get an intercompany promotion or transfer, or wants to leave that company and go to a similar company or similar industry for a promotion, or for someone in a midlife crisis that just totally wants to get out of the industry and do something different, or even for someone that's retiring and looking for their second or third career, or even for a stay-at-home spouse that has suddenly decided to enter the workforce. These four methods that I described, they're relevant to each of these very different situations that I just mentioned. If you're the homemaker that's been out of the workforce for 20 years, you can still use these techniques. Again, you have to make it authentic. You have to do your homework. You have to use your network. You have to find the decision maker at that company you want to work for. And then you got to spin your particular situation so they see your value, so they see why you're going to solve their problems, so they understand why you're going to make that company money, why you're going to make their job easier. Same thing with a little different twist if you're trying to get promoted within your existing company. You got to be building your network within that company from the top to the bottom of that organization. You got to have the CEO liking you so that hiring manager that you're applying to knows that you're favored by upper management and he's not going to want to rock the boat. You've got to have your boss in your network. You got to have your current boss supporting you and promoting you in the organization and willing to let you go on to that next job. You've got to have the guy in the mailroom and the administrative assistants and the doorman. Everybody you can think of in that corporation, everybody that has your ethics, everybody that you can reach out and touch, you want them to know you and like you and be on your team. A well-placed administrative assistant can be your best ally. I know you're not the kind of person that would do this, but I'm going to say it anyways. You don't ever want to talk down to anybody in your organization. You want to treat the hourly employees. You want to treat the low-level employees. You want to treat the people in the cubicles or out on the production floor. You want to treat them all equally well as you would treat the people in upper management, with respect and with integrity. You're going to do that just because you're a good person, and you know that's good karma. You know that's well-mannered. But you're also going to do it because it comes back to you. Those people can help you. People like administrative assistants, they know the pulse and the heartbeat and the informal communication networks of that company. The lady that's typing up the memos or the correspondence for the CEO, she knows what's happening. She knows what's happening in the boardroom. She knows what's going on behind closed doors. And you know as well as I do that if she's on your team, it's highly likely that you could get tipped off about something. It's highly likely that she could put in a good word for you. It's highly likely that she could give you some guidance or assistance or direction. So don't discount anyone. Everyone in your network could be crucial to you, and you likewise want to be supportive and equally helpful to them. Again, you have to look at these four techniques and see what works best for your particular situation. But even if you are that man or woman that's having that midlife crisis and you want to totally go out and go into a different industry, explore something 180 degrees from what you've ever done before, you're still going to come back to these four techniques. One of these four techniques is going to work for you. If you're older and more mature, you're obviously likely to have a network. Now, if you're going outside your industry, it won't be as helpful, but you're still going to have a network in place. You're going to know about your skills and abilities. You're going to know how to communicate and how to be authentic. And so that will make method two much more easy for you to drill down, to study the company that you want to work for, and have the confidence to get in front of that hiring manager or to get in front of that CEO of that company. Again, I've used these techniques. I absolutely know they work. Give them a try. That'll sum it up for this episode where we've talked about how to get that job you want. Now, our final Labor Day series episode will be about earning. We'll talk about the earnings formula and how you can set yourself up to be paid what you're truly worth. So I'll see you on our next episode. As usual, if you have a question or a concern or a comment, you can contact me at wealthsteading.com. I'd appreciate it if you go out and subscribe in a place like iTunes or Stitcher. It would be even better if you left a rating there. Again, I so much appreciate those of you that have already done that, that have made an effort to make that happen. I really appreciate your listening and your support. Until next time, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.